This is CliffCentral.com.
Yes, it's Sia with Salted Wound. I didn't know you'd recorded this, Sia. I'm very proud of you. Well done. Very good work.
Thank you very much. I just reflected on, you know, my life and to draw from those
experiences. And it doesn't even sound like you, which is what's so amazing.
Yeah, but see, when he doesn't try, he actually sounds pretty good.
I was just in a dreamy state as I recorded that. Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right, so we got a busy morning for you. We're going to get into some news with Mabali in a moment or two. It is just after 7, cliffcentral.com, on the 18th of August. We're going to talk about gun control later on with Thomas Borsoff, because a lot of people who are very anti-gun control, like or anti-guns, let's say, not anti, because if you're anti-guns, you're probably pro-gun control. The argument from these people is that if we remove all the guns from society, then society won't be so violent. I mean, that makes sense. Until you think about the fact that the only people who will have guns left are the government. And in this country, where we know our police force have used guns on ordinary citizens at Marikana, in various parts of the country when there are service delivery protests, and we see there are no repercussions for the police in doing so, wouldn't you rather be an armed citizen?
But besides that, if you removed all the guns, there would still be illegal guns. There are always going to be syndicates in existence that are prepared to break the law in order to provide you with substances that are deemed illegal.
And the people who do legally own guns have to jump through so many hoops to keep them and to qualify to own them that they are the least likely people to break those rules when it comes to committing crimes, being irresponsible, any of that stuff. So it's almost as if you've got the good people who apply for the licenses, go through all the legal procedures that they need to go through, store their firearms safely, make sure that they're responsible gun owners. And the illegal people are the ones out there shooting high and low, killing people, doing stupid stuff. And I don't know that that this is a black and white issue, but I have a feeling that there are people who are on one side and people who are on the other. I'd like to know where you sit, and we'll find out in a moment or two with Thomas Borsoff. But before we get into that, there's lots in the news. Mubs, what's happening?
Well, let's go through some of the top trending news stories, shall we? We'll begin with...
What?
We'll begin
with... Yes, I remember
with...
that. Yes.
We will begin with the Grace Mugabe debacle, where now AfriForum have very quickly swooped in and donned on their rage hero cape and are, you know, taking over the storyline.
Khadi Nell.
Yes, lobby group AfriForum said that they're confident that if needs be, they can successfully prosecute Zimbabwe's First Lady Grace Mugabe for her assault against Gabriella Engels.
For what happened in this matter. Shockingly inappropriate.
Who, of course, claims that Mugabe assaulted her with that now infamous extension cord. I don't know how many pictures of extension cords I've seen.
With Beats by Grace.
Oh, please. At a Sandton hotel last week, Sunday, after finding her with her sons. But Mugabe failed to hand herself over to police, as agreed earlier this week, and was then also claiming diplomatic immunity. And then her husband also very quickly stepped in to try and, you know, help his wife out. Oh, so loving. Now, AfriForum announced that it is assisting Engels, and they have said that if the NPA fails to take action against Mugabe in the next 3 months...
When?
Okay, Ben. They will then step in to do that. Advocate Kheri Nell has vowed to ensure that the First Lady is prosecuted, saying, "We'll do what is needed to ensure that justice is done." And then it was also revealed through AfriForum and Kheri Nell that Gabriella Engels was apparently offered a blank check by representatives of Zimbabwe's First Lady, Grace Mugabe, to try and make the whole thing disappear.
Well, it's bad enough that Fikile Mbalula already said that there are two rules. There are rules for ordinary old us who pay his salary, and there are rules for him and his friends in politically high places. So we already know that that counts against us, but then if you have money, you think you can buy your way out of trouble.
Now, in a world where we have seen time and time again that money talks with some people, the Engels family decided to reject the offer of the blank check that the Mugabe family made to them, instead saying that, no, this situation for them is not about money, it's about seeking justice.
See, that's that's real intense.
Well, I mean,
if that happened,
if a lawsuit also comes along, if I have to play devil's advocate, it's about the long end goal, because that lawsuit,
they can get that Mugabe mansion.
Well, it could bring about a lot more money than whatever they were being offered at this current stage. So, you know.
Plus, she can also go on the whole loss of earnings because, you know, she's a model.
She is a model, Ben.
She was struck in her model head.
She was struck on her model face, which, of course, is going to impact her work going forward. So you are absolutely right, Ben.
I mean, if Grace hit me in my face, couldn't sue for as much.
What kind of a barbarian uses an extension cable, though? I mean, you know,
first rule of the street, Gareth, grab what you can.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Gareth. I mean, if you can't get a hold of a gun, as we'll discuss with, you know, the gun control situation, then grab the closest weapon to you. Can be an extension cord, could be a knife, could be a vase, whatever is closest to you.
It could be one of your idiot sons, but they obviously ran away when they saw her.
Do you know, like, good on this girl, and I cannot imagine what sort of gorinas really it takes to pursue something like this, because I would not be able to. Supposedly, and I heard this just in a passing conversation, we don't have any proof to back it up just yet. But
wouldn't it be funny if Grace Mugabe ends up in a South African jail and she can't be the next president?
Oh my goodness.
And
no.
it's like Orange is the New Black. Orange is the New Black SA version.
But imagine her sitting in a South African jail and her husband dies and there's no one to take over.
Because who would like back her up, really?
Yeah, then, I mean, this is like a blessing to the other people in ZANU-PF who want to be in charge.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, they should be paying Harry Nell. Forget AfriForum.
But yeah, from this conversation, I heard that the model supposedly had a friend with her, and the friend is now like, girl, don't call me. I ain't speaking out. I love my life. I don't want to die. And I, like, imagine going up against not just a president's wife, but from Zimbabwe.
Yeah, well,
who can, that's
listen,
crazy.
Rules is rules. And if there's anyone you should be scared of, it's Harry. That guy, you saw what he did to Oscar. Just watch out. Look out. I mean, if OJ had had his trial here, Harry would have taken him down. Harry would have beaten him with that glove. All right, but the big story, the biggest story I saw on Twitter last night, and people are still talking about it, is Makhosi Khoza, who we have dubbed the Tina Turner of the ANC, who's got too many Ikes around her. The story is that Makhosi Khoza has been fired as the Portfolio Committee Chair for the Public Services and Administration Portfolio Committee, which, of course, involves Minister Faith Mutambi, that amazing paragon of virtue in our government, most famous for doing zero over the last course of her tenure. And we're all on the side of Makhosi Khoza. Am I right, Ben? How about you?
Yes,
Makhosi Khoza or
much.
Faith Mutambi?
I'm on the side of, well, not Faith Mutambi.
Okay, and you, Sia?
Defoes Makhosi Khoza.
All right, and Amanda, you have a favorite. Is it Makhosi Khoza or is it Faith Mutambi? Come on, tell us the truth.
It will be Makhosi Khoza.
How about you, Mubs?
Well, Faith, obviously.
You're such a contrarian.
Dr. Khoza, all the way.
Yeah, for sure. I hope this woman is okay, because we know that she's been threatened. We know her kid's been threatened. And she said last night at a lecture at Wits, just two buildings from where I was, that this is a serious threat to democracy. And the ANC itself has become an enemy to democracy. But we like her for this, when she released this song in her guise as Tina Turner. Man, good luck to you, Dr. Makhosi Khoza.
You know, Gareth, this whole analogy works because she doesn't want to be a hero, right? She doesn't want people. She just wants people not to be corrupt. She just wants people not to steal. She just wants Africa to prosper.
Yeah.
You can say what you want about this woman and the fact that she was maybe a little bit quiet early on with the ANC and their wrongdoings, but her desires are pretty good.
Yeah, and I've been very hard on people who suddenly are finding their conscience now against the ANC. Remember, I wrote that letter to the president, I think it was back in 2010, which gets circulated every couple of months, and I looked at it, what was it, about October last year, the last time I looked at it. And, well, without saying I told you so, it was there. That was 7 years ago. And all of these people were firmly ensconced in Jacob Zuma's pocket and in his support base. And, of course, some of them have found their conscience. They've moved on. First couple of them were Thabo Mbeki's friends and allies in the ANC. They moved away first. But slowly but surely, everyone who has a brain has moved away from the president. And anyone who has a conscience and cares about the ANC or cares about South Africa, because the two are not always the same, they're not always aligned, those people have moved away from the president. And now we sit in a situation where good people are the ones who are considered as ill-disciplined within the ANC, and bad people, in other words, the ones who have wasted public money, who have stolen, who have been involved in fraud and corruption, and all kinds of other skullduggery, including for Faith Mutambi flying her relatives around, 30 of them, probably all on business class, to go and watch her talk in Parliament. I mean, these are not the kind of people we need in charge of our country. And when Makosi Khoza is the one who's being called in to be disciplined, but Mduduzi Mdladlana, who is the deputy minister of higher education and actually beat a woman who's been captured on film and which is undisputed, he's been in court already, the ANC don't discipline him. They don't call him in Women's Month and sit him down and go, Kader, it's time to discipline you. You're going against the movement. No, no. Batabile Dlamini, who's the head of the ANC Women's League, stands up for him and turns her back on women. Grace Mugabe beats a woman with an extension cable, and she's not a member of the ANC, obviously. But the ANC were falling over themselves to make it easy for her to get away with this. Most of all, our Minister of Police, Fikile Mbalula. It's embarrassing. Don't pretend. You are such hypocrites with this Women's Month and Women's Day, and how dare you? You think we can't see through your crap? You're an embarrassment. The ANC doesn't care about women. They've never cared about women. They also don't care about poor people in South Africa. They care about lining their own pockets. And whatever's left in the skeleton of the ANC that remains on the throne, the Iron Throne, we should all be very suspicious of everyone who's still clinging to power and clinging to supporting the president. They are the most nefarious, dodgy, nasty, embarrassing people that are in South African politics. Long live everyone who has left.
I'm just getting flashbacks of Cesar Mpofu Walsh yesterday, who was saying people think that removing President Zuma from the seat of power is suddenly going to save the ANC. Look at it now. It's completely a power play. Makosi Khoza said yesterday that she's not surprised by the ANC's decision to remove her, saying that the party is targeting members that it believes supported last week's motion to unseat the president. The ANC chief whip, Jackson Mthembu's offices, had said that the internal conflict that led to Khoza's axing was directly related to her public attacks on the ANC leadership. So a reshuffling of ANC members of the portfolio committee is also on the cards, which means that Makosi Khoza is probably the first of quite a number of people within the ANC who are very quickly going to be pushed out of the fold because they failed to do the right thing and stand by their president. Such is life, people. This is the real world that we live in.
All right.
Okay. So, also trending on Twitter this morning, in fact, since yesterday, is the attack that unfolded on the streets of Spain, where very quickly Spain mounted a sweeping anti-terror operation on the early hours of this morning. This was after a suspected Islamist militant drove a van into crowds in Barcelona. 13 people were killed before they were able to flee. That number is expected to get even higher, though, because the authorities are reporting that more than 100 people were injured in this attack. IS claimed responsibility for the deadly rampage. And as security forces hunted for the van's driver, who was seen escaping on foot, police said that they had killed 5 attackers on Thursday night. And they said that the 5 attackers who were killed were also linked to the van attack. Now, before the van plowed into the tree-lined walkway, one person was killed in an explosion in a house in a separate town, and residents were preparing explosives, according to a police source. Police said that they had arrested 2 men a Moroccan man from Spain's North African enclave, and though neither was the van driver. So it would seem that the van driver is still at large. But Spain were also reporting that they are anticipating more attacks to unfold over this coming weekend. So they'll obviously be on high alert. Right. But yeah, 13 people just mowed down by a driver in a van.
Religion of peace.
Now, do you want to take a look at how many, or rather which countries have the most official languages?
We must be up there, right? I mean, yeah. We must be somewhere in the top 10 with our 7 official languages.
11.
11.
7 official.
Sorry, Afrikaans and Sepedi.
7-11.
7-11.
Most countries have one or two official national languages. In fact, a total of 143 countries in the world with two official languages. And that seems to be the going number. Mm-hmm. While a few, including the United States and Mexico, have none. The United States and Mexico have no official language. Now, official languages have special legal status.
Mexico doesn't have an official language?
Neither does the United States, and I'll tell you why. Official languages have special legal status and are the languages which are used within government. But for multilingual nations particularly, it can be important to designate official languages at national level. So Spain has no official language, despite Spanish being the language of government and spoken by the majority of the population. It has not been given the official legal status that is required for one to be an official language. Similarly, the United States also does not have an official language. English is the de facto language of government and business, but many other languages are used, commonly Spanish, Chinese, French, quite dominant in the United States. So those two countries are the only two in the world that don't have an official language. Now us, South Africa, we have 11, a number that could soon increase to 12 if the country's parliament accepts a recommendation to give sign language official status.
Oh, God, really?
But the country that beats us, with a population of over 1.3 billion people.
Who would that be?
In fact, they have 454 living languages in that country, yes. Mm. But they have 16 official languages. So they are the country with the most official languages in the world.
Wow.
English and Hindi, which is spoken by 30% of the population.
Only 30%, huh?
Yeah. Are the official languages at national level. However, there are a total of 16 in India because states can also choose their official languages. But how's that? 454 living languages in India. 454.
How's that even possible?
It's communication. It's how humans have evolved.
Too many. Listen, India. Stop it.
No, you don't you dare tell India what to do or how to do it.
It's goddamn ridiculous. You know how hard it is to communicate with you guys?
All as it is.
Oh, come on. I don't understand this official language crap. I mean, you know, if I weren't raised English, I'd still want to speak English because it seems to be the language in which most of the important communication in the world is done. I'm very happy that I was raised English.
Look, it's
lucky. It's like an advantage.
It's beneficial being multilingual. I mean, think about people who can switch from English to Mandarin to, you know, French to, like, I envy those people.
Oh, me too.
Like, they are the ones who are at an advantage. They never get left out of the conversation, you know?
Let's talk about someone who really does know everything about everything. Ben managed to find an interview with his sports hero, Gary Player. We often refer to Gary.
The country's hero, Gareth.
Of course. A hero of the world, Ben. Let's not mess around. So yeah. Gary Player, who's this interview with?
It's a guy called Graham Bensinger. He does a whole bunch of really good interviews. He's interviewed Arnold Schwarzenegger recently as well.
Okay.
But he does a lot of golf interviews.
So this is him saying hello to Gary, and then Gary gets stuck in, and he just... You know, you can't stop this guy once he starts.
Gareth, I spent a lot of time taking these clips apart. I have probably given you maybe 10% of what Gary shared in this interview, but we haven't got enough time. So this is just 10% of what is out there in this interview.
I'm playing golf yesterday with a SAP company group, but I see people on the other side of the fairway. How are you? And I'll give my card and I'll drive up. How are you? And those guys are going to tell 10 people. Gary came and saw me and said hello to me.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
All right, so that's how it starts.
He has had way too much of his own Kool-Aid to sip on. Like, it's gone straight into his brain. Yes, yes.
Well, let's just play some more clips.
What else does he talk about?
Gary, of course, was... I mean, Sia probably wouldn't know this because he's very young, but Gary grew up in the time of apartheid, I believe, which is very tough for him because wherever he went in the world... Some people were actually really against him, even though he was fighting for the right causes.
Didn't he single-handedly bring down apartheid? That's what he says.
Well, yeah.
Oh.
But and while he was doing that, he was still met with resistance. People were like, they would obstruct him in every way possible.
Golf club in hand, Gary tackled apartheid all on his own. Listen to this.
Well, I feared for my life for 2 years living under the apartheid government, which I didn't invent. In fact, I broke apartheid in sport, which most people in my country don't even know about. I've never done an interview about this. Oh. I'll come back to that in a minute with Datum.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm so glad you told us, Gary. This is the first I've heard. Anyone else?
Yeah, me too.
This is huge.
He single-handed. Did you hear what he said?
Yes.
Just listen to that
most
again.
Most people in my country don't know this.
In fact, I broke apartheid in sport, which most people in my country don't even know about.
And it's
I've never done an interview about this.
2017, we still don't know.
How silly of us to have not been paying attention all this time.
Sure.
Oh, guys, where's International Gary Player Day?
I go to my prime minister at that time, John Foster, who was a great believer in apartheid. I said, Mr. Foster, I want to break apartheid in sport. I'm a sportsman. I'm not a politician. I'd like, and he said, what would you like to do? And he had these big eyebrows. And I said, I'd like to invite a black golfer from America to come and play in our PGA, which is whatever our majors.
That's what his secret weapon was, to invite one black
that was
golfer.
It, yeah.
Listen, let's give it a chance. You haven't done anything, so shut up and don't criticize Gary.
He looked at me like that. It seemed like a minute. Hmm. And he said, go ahead. I said, because I really want to get rid of this apartheid in sport. And he said, go ahead. And Lee Elder came out, did a marvelous job.
And there, in one stroke, Gary destroyed sports apartheid.
Just go ahead. I mean, Gary walked into that office. Wow. And that was it.
All it took was a minute.
Does he talk about America having apartheid as well?
Well, Gareth, yes, that's another thing that we haven't quite touched on as people yet.
So listen to Gary's wisdom on this.
Because you had apartheid in America, and Charlie Sifford and others weren't allowed to play. When I played here, they were not allowed to play on the tour. They weren't allowed to play on the tour, man, damn it. And I'll never forget playing with Charlie Sifford at Greensboro. I was walking up the par four before the par five, and I saw this guy kick Charlie Sifford's ball in the rough. And I called the PGA, and I said, I saw this guy kick the ball in there. He was able to replace it. On the par three, there was mutterings, go home, nigga, we don't want you here.
So Gary did...
Sure, so not only did Gary save South Africa with regards he saved America as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
So Gary was trying to win the tournament, of course, because he was the best. But
he saved
standing
someone
up for
from
it.
The N-word.
Yep.
Yeah.
What a guy. I mean, we should have International Gary Player Day.
And man, I stood up for him.
Yeah.
And he took his pencil and thumped it on the table. He said, how do you play with this going on? I said, Charlie, I understand. I'm from South Africa. Mm. I understand what you're going through.
Right. He knows what all black people felt. And Gary, you know what? We owe you a debt of gratitude. People don't know this about you. A lot of South Africans don't appreciate all the work that you did.
Exactly.
Do you want to hear him talking about his good friend Nelson Mandela? Is this going to drive you over the edge?
No.
Oh, as if we aren't over the edge.
We can handle it.
No, let's go on. Yeah.
You know, my buddy, he fought for your rights.
Sure.
Nelson Mandela.
Mm-hmm.
What most impressed you about him?
First time I met him, he wasn't president. I went up to his office, and he requested to meet me, which was a great honor. And he said, I have asked you to come and see me because when I was in jail...
This is Gary's attempt at an accent, by the way.
Well,
this is exactly how Nelson Mandela sounded.
No.
And he said, I have asked you to come and see me because when I was in jail, you in Cape Town said that they should release me.
He sounds Afrikaans.
He did John Foster. Allow him to try and do Nelson Mandela. Come on.
You know what? You've got an open mind.
And he said, which I appreciated. Mm. And he said, mm. I am aware that you sponsored all these black golfers to go mm. overseas.
You hero, you.
Which I appreciate.
Yeah.
And he said, I am now going to rule the country and bring everybody together. Huh. I want people who've left South Africa.
I told Gary that first, all right, just in case you're wondering. Gary was the first to hear that he's going to bring people together.
I want people who've left South Africa to come back home.
Right.
Which, not, some did. Some did. Hmm. And I said, but surely you must hate the white. He sat in jail for 20 years, man.
Man?
And you had a house arrest for five, whatever it was. And he said, Gary, you see this green apple here? He said, that green apple is green on the outside and ripe on the inside. It's juicy. If I have hatred and non-forgiveness in my heart, I will be the green apple on the outside, but rotten on the inside. And he says, I don't have a long time to live. I want to have pleasant thoughts. I want to be juicy and sweet. Oh, and he says, God forgives.
How's that?
Sure. Where would we be without Mr. Gary?
That's like, I keep telling you guys.
This is like those people in Galilee before Jesus walked around.
Oof.
It's a big deal.
Play on, player.
Listen, there's just a little bit more, because I don't know about you, but I can't get enough of this. This is great. So powerful. All right? I mean, a lot of people say, well, why is everyone making such a fuss at Gary Player? Well, I mean, let me tell you.
So now I've won 9 major championships in the record book.
Has he ever told anyone that before in an interview?
I think a few times, but I don't misquote me.
Just a few.
But in my mind, I know I've won 10. Because I'm playing in the tournament, and I'd get to the top of my backswing, and somebody would throw a book in my back, telephone book. Then I'd get on the green. This happened in the tournament. Get on the green, they're just ready to putt, and they'd throw 2 balls between my legs. Wow. Now, when you're wanting to win a major championship, think about this. It's hard to comprehend. And then on the 9th hole, I had a putt this long, 15 inches. And these guys were standing on the edge of the green, which they were allowed to do close in those days, and they all simultaneously shouted, "Miss!" as I brought the putter down. I missed the hole by that much. And then I got to the 10th hole, and I was playing with Jack Nicklaus, and these guys charged out of the mounds onto the green, and the police were grabbing them, and the guys skidded like it and tore up the green. And then I got to the 10th hole, and they threw ice in.
It sounds like World War I on those greens for Gary. Like he was just being assailed by all people on all sides. What a tremendously hard life.
My eyes. This is how I had to play. And I lost, I think, by 1 or 2 shots to Raymond Floyd. Young guys playing the tour don't even know about that.
No.
The thing I'd learned by that time.
They
don't. Don't feel sorry for yourself. But it is sad for a person. When I was in South Africa, I broke the apartheid in sport. Yes. I sponsored at least 7 black golfers.
7?
Sponsored many of the black golfers to play overseas.
Yes.
Got tournaments for them in those days. They weren't allowed to play in a white tournament. Oh. And I went to my business friends and we got 100,000. We sponsored 3 tournaments. But whatever you did was never enough. According to certain black militants in South Africa, Gary Player didn't do enough.
No.
He should have stopped playing,
which
I was not prepared to do. I was not prepared to stop my livelihood. But I knew that I did an awful lot.
Uh-huh. And I think it was like your first book or one of your early books, you wrote, you were a believer of the apartheid system of government then, and you know, the separation of races. So why do you think you believed that?
Well,
then,
because Muhammad Ali in America was saying we must live, the blacks must live in different states, and our government was saying to us, it was very similar to Germany. We were brainwashed to a great extent, and we were told by our government, this will be. Now, I'm a young man. I haven't had a world experience. That this will be separate but equal. So I thought, well, you know, if it's going to be separate but equal, that's not so bad. They'll have the equal that we have. There'll be no real problem. But it wasn't so. They were pulling the wool over our eyes.
So a message just came in on WhatsApp. You guys are jealous of Gary.
Yeah.
Well, of course. Who wouldn't be? What a life.
Just saying that shows how jealous you are, Gary, too.
Yeah.
Last night my grandfather came for dinner.
Oh, by the way, we have an update on Amanda's grandfather, who, remember, had that accident because of that cat.
Yeah, so last night...
No, hold on. Just tell everybody about the cat, because that was the update we need to get.
apparently the cat did survive.
That was a cat who ran into his bicycle, a horrible story. It ruined his cycling career.
Yeah, no, shame, poor guy.
But the cat survived.
So last night they were over for dinner because I needed to fix my grand's iPhone or whatever. I don't know why she has it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were watching golf, actually. So then I was like, Gary Player came into my mind. So I'm like, Dick, what do you think of Gary Player? Then he's like, oh, what a horrible man. He's an asshole. I hate him. I can't tolerate him. So I'm like, oh, shame. But why? He's like, the one time I was watching him play golf in Germiston and his dad was there and I was standing next to his dad. And then his dad was like, go, Gary. And then Gary, like, walked over and just pushed his dad. And now he's an asshole. I was like,
Gary
okay,
pushed
Dick.
His dad.
Yeah, Gary pushed his own dad out of the way. So Dick's like, no, he's an asshole.
Wow. Well, Gary, that's nothing if he pushed his own dad. He's lucky. He goes up to kids who are overweight in various parts of the world and says, hey, why are you so fat? You need to lose some weight. What are you eating for breakfast?
He actually has been witness that he went over to a kid and he slapped a hamburger out of his hand and says, you stop eating that. You're going to become fat.
So we were brainwashed. It was really amazing how a government could brainwash. You can understand what happened in Germany. After I grew up and traveled and saw what was happening, and you know, I came to America, there was apartheid here. So I didn't learn much here, but I learned a lot going to England. It was a very civilized society. They didn't have anything like that. So I was traveling and a lot of places that didn't have it, and I learned an awful lot. And then you sit back and you say, wow, what did Germany do? How did they brainwash a nation?
Well, there's Gary dispensing some wisdom, and this is quite right from Michelle. She says, what I love about Gary is his modesty. It's definitely his best quality.
Yeah, that right there. That's it.
Well, I mean, we'd love to have Gary here if he's ever around. Ben, you'll set up that interview for us. If we ever could.
Because I think Gary does a lot of fluff interviews where they just sit back and they go, oh, Gary. Well, he comes here, we'd be quite different.
I am sure, says Vaynant, that when Nelson Mandela spoke to the great Gary Player, he did change his accent to exactly what Gary said.
Also true.
And a lot of people are saying, well, you know, Gary always used to say, the more I practice, the luckier I get. So if you feel like luck isn't on your side, just practice some more.
That's it.
If you're living in squalor right now, if you don't have running water, if you have to shit where you sleep, just try harder.
And then it will all be fixed.
That's right. Okay. Anything else you want to throw in, Mubs?
No, that's it.
That's it. Anyone else? Anything going on that anyone wants to throw into the mix?
No, I'm still redigesting Gary's thoughts.
Stuff for the weekend that's going to be exciting?
Sorry, just one plug. If you want to see every single thing from the interview, I've put it on my blog. There is 12 different clips. It's really worth it. He talks about everything. He talks about how he could have cured Tiger if Tiger had wanted Gary to help him.
Mm. He could have cured Tiger.
Yeah, Tiger would have been still winning majors if he had Gary's advice.
And then when the guy asks him, what's the advice? He says, oh, I can't tell you that. Right? Yeah. Now, everybody knows this is one of our favorite clips in the world.
Billions and billions and billions and billions.
It's
and
3 minutes of Donald Trump just saying billions.
And billions and billions and billions and billions and billions and billions.
Which is great. But then there's a new clip that's been going around. It's a compilation of all the times that he said this.
Say China. China.
Hey. You go over to China. You take China. I love them. China. I have to have my China. Because China.
Don't say that the Trump presidency isn't delivering on comic value, all right? This is the leader of the free world. Oh, that's great. Anyway, so there is a lot going on at the moment in politics in America, and we don't have to get into that today, but people are talking about this Russia connection with Trump, and some people think it's all fake news, and some people are saying, but Donald Trump's son met with the Russians. And I know for some of us this is old news, but it's still going on. And there's some people who refuse to believe that anything dodgy wasn't happening, and there's some people who refuse to believe anything dodgy was happening. There's a great sign up in a shop somewhere. It says, dogs are welcome inside, but please tie your children to the post out in front. Hmm. How do you like that? All right, let's get to our guest for this morning. That's coming up next. We're going to meet with a guy called Thomas Bossoff, and we'll talk about guns. There's the Firearms Control Act 60 of 2000, which regulates the ownership of firearms by civilians. Ownership of a firearm is conditional on a competency test and several other factors, including background checking of the applicant, inspection of the premises, licensing of the weapon by the police that was introduced in 2004. You can't just have a gun in South Africa. It's not like in America where you walk into a Walmart and you go, I like three of those shotguns, one semi-automatic rifle, or two handguns, and a club. Here you have to have certain conditions applied in order to get your firearm.
Thankfully so.
Well, yes. But who are the bad people? And why should anyone have a gun? Who are they protecting themselves against? All of this is worthy of discussion. And it's coming up next. It's Friday morning, everybody. This is like for 2 weeks in a row, our Friday song. Get ready for the weekend. What was that? Mabali just told me that Sia, she was asking Sia for advice on where the best place is to take a selfie. Because, you know, Mabs has like a social media interaction rate of about one every 300 years.
Yeah, I have zero selfie taking skills.
Do you even have an Instagram? I know I follow you on Instagram.
Yeah.
I don't think you've ever posted anything.
No, it has zero posts.
Oh my
so
goodness.
I asked this one, who is the selfie king, where's the best place to take a selfie in this office?
Right.
And he showed me where to do it. The problem with that place is that you have to look directly into the sun.
Yep.
So I'm blind now.
No, well, listen.
Okay, hang on a second. Why are you taking a selfie?
Yeah, because Mabali walked in and she stumbled into the furniture and she was like falling all over the place.
I thought she had a stroke. Are you updating Tinder or why would you need something like that?
No, I'm updating my WhatsApp profile pic.
Ah. All right.
See, firstly, I'd like to say that I'm so grateful that my expertise in this office is so varied.
So here's the guy.
You know,
he helps you with all that.
From where the extra stationery is to how to take a selfie.
Then I just won't have a selfie then. It's fine.
Roman from the Renegade Report says, Gary sounds like a typical suburban middle class guy that hasn't thought deeply about his ideas. It's as if he never has two opposing... It's as if he never has two opposing thoughts in his brain at the same time. Have a seat. All right. Thomas Bossop sent me an email the other day and said, you know what you don't talk about is guns. So first of all, fuck you, Thomas. I do. I talk about guns. I was at the weapons fair at the Imperial War Museum on Sunday. Did you go to that?
Unfortunately not.
Yeah, some kind of gun activist you are. Should have seen there were guys there with like unbelievable. You have to be a real enthusiast to think about guns as much as these guys did. And I'm not an enthusiast. I do think that everybody deserves the right to at least protect themselves and to have a weapon when they need it. And I've always said the line that convinced me was when a friend of mine said to me, it is better to have a gun and not need it than to need a gun and not have it. And I think that there's very little argument you could put up against that line for any person who believes in self-defense. But I want to know what you think. So you emailed me. What's on your mind, Thomas? First of all, welcome, man.
Thank you, Gareth and team. You know, gun control is most probably the worst thing that they can try to sell the general population. You know... I've got a saying, you know, every respectable human being should own a gun.
That's what you think?
Yeah.
Even kids?
No. Not kids, but, you know,
adults.
Competent.
Responsible, competent adults.
Adults, yes.
All right.
Doesn't matter if you're male or female, you know, you should have a gun.
Okay, why?
Criminals don't care about the law. They will attack you with anything and...
Extension cable.
Extension cords, knives, rusty pangas.
Sure.
You know, and a gun is an equalizer to any situation. You know, you can have some road rage idiot and he gets out of a baseball bat and you climb out of your gun. He will not really want to...
Yeah, but what if he gets out of the gun too? You know, then what, are you going to have a shootout in the middle of the highway?
Then you have a Mexican standoff.
No, the reason that I wanted to talk to you about this is because we do have a huge amount of regulation around this in South Africa. I think sufficient regulation. There are some people who believe there should be even more strict gun controls. Now, what do you say to those people, particularly like gun-free South Africa, and people who say that what we should do is remove all private firearm ownership? What do you say to them?
Okay, first off, you know, the regulation, I do agree with gun competency, because back in the apartheid years, you know, any person just had, you know, you go to a gun shop, buy a gun, get your license, and off you go. With the gun competency, when they brought it in, it was to actually educate new gun owners or any gun owners how to properly work a gun, store a gun, and, you know, be sufficiently also about the law, mm-hmm. when and not to use it. But also, back those days in the apartheid years, 95% of your average South African person that was 16 and older came out of military, they had military experience.
Right, so they'd used guns before. It's not as if they'd never held a gun before.
Yes.
But you're talking also about mostly white South Africans who were in the white government army. You're not talking about the average black South African. Unless they were an MK. I mean, most black South Africans didn't have weapons.
You know, I know a lot of black Portuguese-speaking guys that was in the old 3-2 battalion. I know one of my mom's neighbors was a commanding officer in the 3-1 battalion, mm-hmm. that was also predominantly, you know, Cape Coloureds or, you know, black South Africans. Mm-hmm. But regardless, you know, of the old government, but there's like the Black Gun Owners Association.
There's a Black Gun Owners Association.
Yeah. CMM in South Africa.
You in that?
We are. We just
didn't show you my
talk
membership
about
card.
It in front of y'all.
Yeah. Because, I mean, someone like Mabali, right? Now,
listen,
she's got
any,
a lot of
any,
weapons.
Any black association I belong to, I keep to myself.
Right.
You know, I'm just saying.
Okay. But Mubs, you believe in, like, self-defense. I know, because you've got an array. Your bedside table is basically an arsenal of weapons. What have you got on there again? The bear claw, the mace spray?
The taser.
The taser. Three things.
Yeah.
Do you have a gun?
No, I do not.
Do you believe in having... Would you want to have a gun?
I wouldn't want a gun for myself, no.
Because you think you aren't the right person to have a gun, or because you don't like guns?
I don't like guns. Okay. For myself.
All right. No, no. It's totally acceptable, right? I mean, you're not against that, Thomas. You can't go force people to have guns.
No, no. If she doesn't like a gun, then that's a...
Right.
That's a problem.
I mean, there have been very good arguments mounted by people who are anti-gun about the dangers of your own gun being used against you. Mm. And we've seen innumerable examples of fathers who wake up at 3 a.m., they hear a noise outside, and they end up shooting their own child. We know about those stories, right?
Yeah. You know, any accident can happen, you know,
sure.
if you drive a car or
sure.
anything. You know, in today's South Africa society, you know, there are 55 violent murders committed every day in South Africa, mm-hmm. according to Statistics South Africa. And that mounts up to about 20,075 people that's being murdered a year in South Africa via rusty panga or guns or stabbings or choking or brutality murders.
Yeah.
You know, that's more
extension cables. Let's not leave that out.
Yeah. And it's more people that died in South Africa than died in Libya or...
Yeah. And these are war zones.
And war zones, yeah. In 2009, for arguably, in Iraq, the amount of people that died there, including civilians, militants, and American soldiers, was roughly about 19,000.
In the whole of the
Iraq war
conflict, okay?
In 2009. Mm-hmm. And that year in South Africa, there was about approximately 24,000 murders committed that same year.
And And is it true in South Africa that a lot of these murders, because I've looked at these statistics too, and the police publish them every year, there's sometimes people look at these statistics a bit askance and they say, well, maybe they make some of it up or they drive it down. Or they, you never know with police statistics. But if we take them at face value, a lot of these murders are committed by people who know each other on people who know each other. It's not as if it's just rampant opportunistic crime. So a lot of the times it's husband and wife, it's uncle and cousin, it's people who are known to each other, which is even more terrifying.
You know, like, for instance, farm murders. You know, there's a farmer being murdered basically every day in South Africa that produces food for those people that kills him.
Right.
You know, and the average age group that kills the farmers are between 18 and 26.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, look at the Oscar and the Van Breda scenario. Yeah. Yes, if love, me and my wife, we had arguments, but we never...
I wouldn't be your wife and want to argue with you. How many guns have you got?
One.
Only got one?
Yeah.
Handgun?
Yes.
What kind?
Vector SP1 9mm pistol.
Nice. Like a little Volta PPK.
That's a nice, good pocket gun. Does the damage.
That's all right.
My wife is a second dan black belt karate instructor.
So who's more dangerous, you or her? Because she doesn't need a gun to be dangerous.
No. I'm only a yellow belt, so.
But Sia, you got a gun?
No. No. That is some. I'm just picturing if you and your wife ever fight, it would be like a Mr. and Mrs. Smith fight where the entire house gets
Amanda,
demolished.
Amanda, have you got a gun? We've
got
to check in on Amanda. Have you got a gun, Amanda? Hang on. Why are you not on here? You just turn on.
Well, from 1610, she probably has a shank as well.
Yeah,
so.
You guys, you've got a shank, right? Is that what you guys use in the East Rand?
I'm petrified of guns. Like.
But you live on the East Rand. I mean, that's like saying you're petrified of cake shops and you and you live in a bakery.
No guns for me. No, right. Thanks.
Family?
My brother-in-law has a few. But
okay. A few?
I don't discuss those.
So, Thomas, let's be clear. You can own, I think it's a maximum of 3 or 4 guns in South Africa. You can have a handgun, a rifle, a shotgun, and a semi-automatic rifle, but you have to then be registered as a sportsman or a target shooter or some kind of, you must be a member of one of these clubs in order to have that many weapons.
Legally, you can only own 4 guns.
Right.
You can have 3 hunting rifles or and 1 pistol or 2 pistols, 1 hunting rifle and 1 shotgun. The second pistol must be if you're occasional sportsman. You don't belong to a club, but you like going out to the shooting range, de-stress, kill some targets.
Mm-hmm.
And
Clay pigeons,
you know, steel plates or whatever. Right. If you're a dedicated sportsman, you can own as many guns as you like.
But you have to have each of those registered and you have
the
competency for each of them, which is a process. I've gone through it. Ben, you're the only person here who's been shot.
Yeah, Gareth, I think so. I hope so.
Same. You are, though. You are.
I've told that story many times.
Yeah, Ben's been shot. You didn't know this?
No. I just,
So, Ben, you don't own a gun.
The hood situation.
Do you like guns?
Not really.
Do you want one?
I think it's pretty obvious that you don't.
I'd prefer not to have a gun.
Okay.
And so far, so good.
Do you know, like, I think it's just the, I don't know, the attitude behind it. And I think what makes personally me uncomfortable is the fact that I don't know if I can truly trust someone else that, like, yo, one day my neighbor won't be pissed off to the point where, you know, my TV is not to his liking, that, you know, like, blows my door down and blows my brains out as well. I think that's what makes it uncomfortable, you know? It's just that every single Tom, Dick, and Jabulani literally has the power in their hands to, you know, just play God at a point. So I think, what's that Michael Douglas movie, Falling Down, where he had one bad day and then he just goes out and just starts killing people? Yeah. That's what I see in my head.
You know, it's like, well, I stay in Krugersdorp, you know.
Wonder you need a gun.
We call it the Wild Wild West Rand. You know, my neighbor is a black guy. He owns a gun.
Yeah.
is actually a very...
Everyone in Krugersdorp has to have a gun.
Yeah. So, yeah. And, you know, very... He's a very nice guy. Mm-hmm. You know...
You're not worried he's going to come in to take
you? No. You know, in the middle of July, his kids were swimming.
Yeah.
Outside.
Yeah.
In the winter.
Well, clearly. Yeah.
So, yeah. But
some people like to swim in the cold.
Yeah. And? You know, like, I was shot in 2009.
Yeah.
You know, right here...
By him?
No,
by your neighbor.
You know, we went collect...
What happened to you? How come you were shot?
I work as a bodyguard.
Oh, God. All right.
Ooh.
That's a tough business.
Yes, especially in South Africa.
Yeah. Who do you... I mean, is these political people, celebrities?
Business.
Business people?
Yeah.
Shit. All right.
Yeah. But
I'd like to have a neighbor who's a bodyguard.
Excellent.
I think that's a plus.
Yeah. I keep the criminals at bay.
No, can you mention anyone you've guarded or would we know them?
No, not really. They, you know, just quiet, rich business people
Who need protection because they've done dodgy deals.
Not just the dodgy deals, but also tax. You know, it's a good way of getting some tax relief because the more you got. You pay them, you know, it's...
Oh, you mean it's a deduction you can make?
So were you guarding someone when you got shot?
Actually, you know, I was working for a company and it's not my forte. I went to collect money for a client, 1.7 million.
In cash?
In cash, yeah. 100 Shit. Rand.
People want 1.7 million in cash on them.
What? Was it like in a suitcase in the movies?
Yeah, it's a bag like this, weighs about 5 kilograms.
You work for the Guptas?
No, I did work for them for 2 weeks.
You worked for them for 2 weeks?
Yeah.
How was that?
Horrendous.
Tell me why.
They don't pay.
Oh.
You must work like a slave. You only got Sundays off, if you're lucky. And you must work. And they treat you like you worse than crap.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how did you get shot? Come on, tell us this story.
We went to collect cash for a client in Danswart from the SBV bank, and information leaked from them that we're driving a unmarked armored vehicle. And it was the 28th of August, around about 10 o'clock in the morning at Craft Road. We were coming from Danswart towards Edenvale.
In the Vale, you see, Amanda. Mm-hmm.
And the robbers pushed the vehicle off the road. I wasn't driving the CIT, Cash and Transit Oak, that was the most experienced guy that's been around the block, let the steering wheel go and they forced the vehicle off and vehicle's door popped open and I said to him, geez, you know, the police are here quickly. Police clothing, bulletproofs, R5. And as I look out the part of the door like this, you know, this is not the cops. Bullets came flying in.
But they were wearing police uniform.
Yeah. And I got shot here with an R5.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can still see there's a huge scar on your arm.
Yeah.
Is that a piece of lead moving in you?
No, it's actually the muscle that grown to the skin.
Oh, right.
Yeah. What the Mission Impossible is going on here?
So that must have been a serious injury, though. At the time, there must have been a lot of blood.
Yeah, you know.
It's in the forearm, by the way. Yeah. If you're wondering what we're talking about, Thomas just held up his right arm, and he just flexed his, you know, like if you open and close your fist. And there's this, like, piece of muscle that moved very strangely in his arm. Yeah, I mean, that must have been awful.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, there was about 12 assailants attacking us, and...
Did they get the money?
Yeah, they blew the armored vehicle up.
Did you find out how they got the information?
Unfortunately, no. Our glorious police service in South Africa has done absolutely nothing. You know, even... Up till today, they haven't even contacted me for a statement or a ballistic test because I shot one or two of the guys that was trying to get to my door. You know, I shot them in the lower extremities.
How did you survive? Because clearly these guys, there were more of them. They were very heavily armed. Did you just fall down and cover yourself?
The vehicle was flipped upside down and the cap was armored. So it was only a gap like, you know, half a foot or to a foot, you know, open. Yeah. And you were standing that side and they were firing.
So as long as you kept your head down.
Yeah. You know, the bullets came flying in. I had bullets in between my toes, between my fingers, you know.
How long until the emergency services arrived?
Well, the fight and the extraction of the cash took about, I would say, about 5 minutes.
Hmm. They're real pros, these guys.
Yeah, you know, they were... They
know paramilitary?
I would say, you know, Mozambican trained, you know, or ex-South African National Defense Force members. You know, the way they operate, you know, the way they handled the guns, you know, it's not some yabo from the street that decide, no, I'm taking an AK, now I'm going to rob a cash van.
These guys know what they're doing.
You know, they... It's precision pointing, you know, how any military or SWAT or, you know, task force, you know, members will execute a, you know, something, you know, that was pinpoint.
All right, but this raises an important issue, and you emailed me to talk about firearms, right?
Yeah.
Can we trust the police to take care of a situation where we have our lives under threat? We've seen time and time again in the news how the police end up turning against citizens, like in Marikana. It's the most recent example. We commemorated 2 days ago the 5-year anniversary of that slaughter by the police, who were heavily armed, against people who didn't have firearms, who had traditional weapons. Can we trust the police to come to our aid if we are in trouble?
No, I don't trust the police at all. You know, there are some good police officers, but generally, you know, the police is as rotten as the government. You know, it's not like back in the apartheid years, you know, when the police traffic officer, you were afraid of them because they did it for the passion. You know, they were strict. You couldn't bribe them. If you bribe them, you...
Well, they weren't angels by any means. But
yeah, but, you know, the law was, you know, governed properly. But now today's police, you know, it's all about bribery, you know, how much money, you know.
No.
You know, I can get pulled over slightly drunk and offer a cop $50 and he will let me go because it's quick $50. You know, like Marikana, you know, there was some that say, you know, the people that got killed had guns with them. Some say, no, they didn't. I wasn't there, so I can't speculate on what happened. But, you know, for... The cops, you know, just to mow down, you know, the people, you know, it's not correct, you know, it's, but, you know, if you look at who's got interest into the mining industry, the government people will protect their assets, you know, because the mine, especially the platinum mining, is big money. But the cops, I don't try, you know.
So what happens if someone breaks into your house?
You know... That's a big scenario that we've been in the bodyguarding and security industries has been, you know, discussing, and, you know, it's difficult to say, you know, it depends on, all right, the attacker that breaks into your house. First of all, he gets access to your premises. He's not there for tea and cookies, so he's there to either steal, rape, murder, or do some grievous bodily harm to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Is he armed or is he not? In competency test, when you do it, they say, you know, you must be a identified target, or the attacker must be identified. Now, then they will say, right now, what's the, if he breaks in, does he have a gun or not? Well, you know, why is he breaking into your property then, you know, or in your house, you know, what's he doing there?
Yeah. So you would rather, in those circumstances, be able to defend yourself than not?
You know, my family is...
And maybe you're not as good with an axe as Henry van Breda.
That's true.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, but that is allegedly true.
You know, if O comes into my house with a gun, you know, I'm not going to ask him, hey, listen, but are you here for cookies and tea? Let's discuss it. You know, I'm going to take my gun and I'm going to make sure that... And gets killed.
Okay, and now I was going to ask, do you shoot with the intent of killing, or do you shoot with the intent of making sure that he's down?
All right, there's two scenarios now. If you shoot to harm the guy, you shoot him in the lower legs or in the chest and he survives. Let's play the race card, black on white, you know. He goes to hospital, he sits there, he gets stitched up, he sits and think of this whole cockamamie story, why... He got shot, you know, he will say, you know, you invited him into your house and you want to sell him these guns and blah, 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 blah. And the courts will 9 out of 10 times believe the Oak. But if you shoot and kill the Oak, then the cops will come. Look, you will still be arrested for murder. Then the detectives that will start investigating the case will saying, all right, was this capable homicide, murder, or self-defense? So that's the three categories where they will play with your case then. They take your statement via either directly from you or through your lawyers. They will look at the evidence. You know, did the Oak broke in? Where did he break in? And did he had a gun? Yes, he had a gun or a rusty panga. Was your life in imminent threat? Yes. Where's your place of safety? That's my house. So that was probable cause to kill him.
Yeah, you'll be able to establish by evidence whether the guy had broken in or whether you had invited him in for tea. And
not like Oscar Pistorius. You know, you did want to kill his girlfriend. And
well, that's what the courts decided.
You know, if you look at, you know, that whole, I remember the Beeld newspaper had this whole depiction of his room. And, you know, my version was he and his girlfriend had a huge argument. She picked up, he slapped her around because he's an aggro sportsman.
Mm.
And she picked up a cricket bat, says, if you hit me again, I'm going to knock your block off. He says, oh, screw that, I've got a gun. She ran to the bathroom. He went behind her, rage of the moment, shot and killed her through the door.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Well, listen, I mean, this is an interesting conversation. We've really opened up a can of worms here for a lot of people that they are not convinced. I mean, listen to this quickly. Savannah's saying, I'm listening to the discussion about gun restrictions and the reasons why everyone should have a gun, and I'm not convinced. Saying that if both people pull out a gun when there's a road rage incident is not a convincing reason why everyone should have a gun. All very well that you have a gun to protect yourself, but the other guy might have one too, and then what? I mean, this is something that we... As I said earlier, there are no black and white answers to. And for many people, it's important to have one. For other people, it's important that South Africa be at least that gun ownership be as restricted as possible. And both have very valid arguments. And I don't know what your position is on this, but Thomas, thanks for coming to see us this morning. We've got to get on with it. We've got Kelly Kumalo and lots of other things to get to. But thanks for spending some time with us this morning.
Thank you very much.
I carry a gun, says Thomas, because a cop is too heavy.
Girl, I don't know.
Very nice. That's a wrap for this morning with Thomas. Here's the un-news for you, and then we get to Kelly Kumalo, our guest for this morning, someone who everybody in South Africa knows very, very well, someone who's a major part of the national conversation, whether she wants to be or not. We'll talk to her about that too. All right, here's what you need to know. The ANC have decided to discipline Makosi Kwaza. They have simply had enough of her and her correctness. There is no place for someone like her in the ANC, says Jackson Tembu. Tembu added that the ANC have mastered the art of corruption in recent years, and to stop this now, as Kwaza once, would be like telling Pick and Pay to stop selling groceries. It's just madness. Fikile Mbalula is having a tough week after saying all crime will be gone in South Africa by December. Recent events suggest this is obviously unlikely. To combat this, he's urged all South Africans to either become really famous or to become a diplomat. And then the law doesn't apply to you, so technically crime will come down. And finally, the Springboks play Argentina tomorrow in PE and are looking to end off the week on a high note. More importantly, they're just looking to end the week as they've had to do all manner of publicity work, ranging from standing at intersections to appearing on radio stations. The standing at intersections wasn't so bad, but appearing on local radio was nothing short of demoralizing. And we will see you on Monday. But before we go, we'll leave you with Kelly Kumalo, a discussion I had with her just yesterday. So it's fresh. One of the most famous people in South Africa, for your listening pleasure. Well, do you want to hear it? See ya?
I think yes.
All right, let's get to it.
This is CliffCentral.com.